This time on Culturefile, we're back in the digital domain with Aisling Kelleher to talk about some of the technologies that are shaping the digital future of classical music as we move from a place of lossy compression to the wonderful world of lossless compression, which promises better than CD-sounding music streaming over the internet. But before we get there, I asked Aisling Kelleher to talk to me a little about digital audio compression and why it's both sexy and fun.
Compression has really come about because with analog, when we've had like analog files before, so whether it be on your, you know, your piece of vinyl, you're not necessarily, unless you're a DJ, going to walk around with all your vinyl, or when you have a bunch of CDs. But now in today's domain, where we have mobile computing and mobile technology in our pockets, we really need to deal with the idea of how can we get this stuff quickly and how can we get a lot of it onto our devices. So compression is the way the audio domain in particular has tried to deal with this. So the way compression really works is it tries to first of all look at the file, the original master file, and see where is there redundancy, where is there kind of things that are not statistically significant. So there's an analysis done on the file to try and see what pieces of information could we throw away that, you know, could might or might not have some impact on the audio quality, but overall people could kind of live with it. So for example, something like MP3 or AAC files, which are the ones we most typically encounter in the digital domain, they have kind of have a lot of compression that's been put on them to throw away a bunch of, say, frequencies or that kind of mask one another, or frequencies at the high and low ends that if we throw them out and we're not listening to them on really good speakers anyway, we're not really going to perceive the difference. But what they do result in is by getting rid of things that are kind of statistically insignificant, you really greatly reduce the file size. And that has, you know, a great impact on the amount of content that you can say carry with you. But more importantly, if you're streaming content, it has a huge impact on the amount of bandwidth that you might be able to take up. And this is more and more important today as the mobile devices that we have rely on flash storage, or the type of ultrabook laptops that we're carrying around are now non-mechanical, so they don't have as much storage space in that. But also because we're relying so much on the cloud in many cases, whether it be for looking at services like Pandora or through Apple or anything, we really want to focus on that. The download needs to be pretty quick. It needs to stream really well. So the primary way that we can do that is we have to reduce the file size and the kind of the bandwidth hogging of these files. So compression is the way to go.
But for classical music fans, there is an alternative to this business of throwing away parts of the information, and that is something called lossless compression, which I find close to witchcraft. Tell us a little bit about lossless compression.
Well, one claim would be that when you think about a master copy being at, say, 100% fidelity, and when we get to something like an MP3, we're at 5% fidelity, and that's kind of one overt claim. But one idea would be that compression, you can throw away between a tenth, you know, to a 20th of the original space is what remains. So I think what people who are really interested in listening to high quality music are familiar with doing it, either through CDs or through vinyl recordings. MP3s really just don't cut it from them because the amount of material that has been thrown away and the impact that has in terms of the clarity or the dynamic range of what they're listening to. One way people talk about audio compression is like, well, how could we reduce the amount of information that we're sending, but, you know, that the information is completely accurate and could be recreated correctly. So if I have a signal that I'm sending that goes A, 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 B, A, I could send that as is, but I could also send that in a pretty lossless way by saying it's four A's, then a B, then an A. And I'm sending a lot less information in terms of the bits, but I'm still getting across exactly what it is. I think if you scale that up and then do lots of crazy math and apply it in the audio domain, you get something similar.
But there is a good reason to believe that the kind of the first audio compression technologies and the first internet sound technologies weren't as good for translating complex music or for transferring, moving about complex music.
I think you think of our first experience of looking at images on the web, going back to like in the 90s, they were very, very simple. Or the idea of like our very first printers that we had at home, we printed out on dot matrix printers, and then we moved to laser printers. And you can see the increase in the fidelity and the ability of the representation to be smoother or, you know, more akin to, say, an original photograph. Of course, we're going to get large kind of technological developments in that, and that we can either have, we can do the processing on our own machine, so we can decode the actual audio on our own machines, for example, in a quicker way, or that it's just mastered in a much smarter way. So comparing our first kind of experiences of audio or digital audio, which was quite tinny, was done in a quite crude way, to today, which we've seen things like iTunes, for example, with their Mastered for iTunes, looking at, well, why can't we make really high quality audio available to folks? Why can't we move it up a notch? And how can they, in particular, how can they give advice to engineers and work with technicians to really think about not necessarily trying to go for the highest quality, but at least trying to improve the quality of the types of the relationship between the original master and what it is that people experience in the digital domain. On the downside, some of these things are going to cost a little bit more money, or they might take up more space. For example, Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails fame, he kind of circumvented this in some way by releasing a lot of very high quality masters on BitTorrent, where you can put huge files up there and people can download them slowly bit by bit. So I think there's ways around that, and we're seeing people or entities work in interesting domains to think about how can we make very, very high quality, almost master quality audio available in a digital way that can be downloaded and won't be too expensive and won't take up too much space. And that's kind of, I hope that's where we're going to move in the future. Again, it will depend on what is the quality of equipment that you have to play that back, and what is your own ability or kind of sensibility about, you know, what you're willing to put up with.
The other thing, and I suppose the world of music is just one example, that the whole internet domain has moved more and more towards subscriptions rather than individual, discrete, personally owned items. And I wonder what that means for the way we feel about music.
Subscription, I think the idea of like, well, maybe I just don't own necessarily my own kind of individual artifacts of music, but I own my taste. And my taste is what these different types of channels are kind of streaming to me. Get rid of the idea of like the joy, and I think this probably more belies our age, the idea of making a mixtape. The whole series of curating your own type of musical library and the pleasure that it takes in looking back on that, and what it is that we're going to do when it all becomes kind of intangible, or what happens when you lose it. So I think there's a similar to our attitude towards books or any other types of cultural artifacts that we keep in our home. How do we display them? How do we conspicuously consume and share them with other people? This is a challenge when we just specifically go to the digital domain.
Professor Aisling Kelleher there, speaking to me from her desk in Carnegie Mellon University. And don't forget, if you'd like to hear that file again, it's available in Pause and Think MP3 form via our podcast from the Lyric site and from culturefilepod.tumblr.com.